This is Phil Ferrand. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. And it's my wedding anniversary. Been married for 32 years. So, that's cool. I just stopped into Walmart to get a card and some flowers. And my wife is making supper tonight. And so we are 32 years now. Gonna do some kind of a little something or other for celebrating this next week. I should warn you that I do not have COVID, but I'm going to get gravelly here because I was at the end of a fast and I went to the church to help with video, and then I swung by Walmart to get card and flowers and that kind of stuff, and there was a snack there and I just couldn't resist. I got myself a snack. So that means I just had a carb load. And what typically happens after I have a carb load like that is I get all clogged up. So something to look forward to in this podcast. Anyways, so all is well. Everything seems to be going fine at work. We're puttering along. Releasing some more beta stuff. Working on some more little projects. That's all going fine. Just setting them up and knocking them down. You know, I mentioned this week there were some things about all this that I wish would go faster, but we don't have available to us tools that might exist and I don't know about in the marketplace to make this all go faster. One of the frustrations about doing the kind of work that I do, which is business programming software, it's just the same thing over and over and over again, and it just seems like we should be able to deal with it at a conceptual level than where we deal with it. And I had started down the road of trying to build some tools so that I could do that. But I built the first, what I thought was fairly simple tool to do database security at a granular level, rule-based database security at a granular level. And it worked good, but it was just so hard to get even the programmers who knew me to work with it and use it, that I just looked at this and I thought, man, this is going to be an uphill slog to build something and then try to get someone else to actually use it and support it and then, you know, yada, yada, yada. And on the basis of all that, I just thought, you know, you could do all this or you could write. And I just decided I'd rather write fiction. So, not write more programs, write fiction. So anyways, this was the first full week of writing for book 14 of the 24 book series. So once I get this one done, I'll have 10 more to do. And once I get 15 done, I will be in the single digits of books left to write. So I'll only have 9 more at that point. So that's pretty interesting. Just pretty interesting. Book 14. I seem to be off to a pretty good start. I think I know where I'm going with this. The new book is going to be called Windfall the Herd. So I don't know exactly where we're all going with that, but I know enough of the pieces that I can get started. And that's usually the way it works. You get started, you putter along, then more things come along, and then you putter along a little more, and more things come along, and before you know it, you've got a 450-page book. So next week's going to be a little bit of a challenge for writing because my beloved and I are taking a little bit of time off. But I expect to be able to get some writing done in the mornings and in the evenings. So it'll be fine one way or another. I'm actually ahead of schedule. Typically, I don't start the second book of the year until, well, the first book of next year is really where this one will end up, until August, or until October 1st, so I'm a week ahead, 2 weeks ahead, so I'm good, all is well. Let's see, costumes, tomorrow is National Comic Book Day, that should be fun. This last week was Talk Like a Pirate Day, so people seem to enjoy that. We had some fun there. And I'm planning out my costumes into the future now and working on those. I actually had someone take a first look at a couple of the costumes this week, and specifically take a first look at World Kindness Day, which is going to be bizarre and weird, because it's the week after the week of the election, and I'm just guessing that things are going to be crazy. And so I was looking to do something that would sort of jar people out of that worrisome mindset and just say, it's World Kindness Day, it's World Kindness Week, be kind. But, you know, sometimes it's hard to know where the line is on these things. I mean, I thought I had it put together correctly, but some of this, what will women find funny, is a bit more, it's a bit more intuitive than it is necessarily analytical. But I did show mostly the entire costume to a friend this week, and she burst into laughter and laughed and said, I love that, I like that, it's good, you know. And she actually told me later, she said, I love that costume. I said, well, good. I said, that's good, good, good. So I think I'm on track. I still have to run it by my wife and get sign off on her, but I think it'll be fine. I don't know. I'm sure it's fine. I am a little bit tight on time tonight because my wife is making supper, and Amber is going to join us. She's the young lady who's been living with us for several years, and Lynette's best friend, Ray, is down staying with us temporarily while she moves into the area. So she's going to be with us as well. So that's supposed to be at 6:30. It's 6:10 now. So I will putter along with this. Anyways, costumes are good. Writing is good. Work is good. Family is good. Everything's good. It's just good. All is well. All is well. Had a nice walk with a friend this morning. We had a little bit of talk about politics, talked more about our own hearts and how the flesh is a corruptive force in us all. In us all, it's a corruptive force. And how that, you know, when you start pointing fingers at others and accusing them of things, you're really outside the scope of the gospel. Jesus never called us to be condemners. We are called to love our neighbors. So, I don't know. We'll see. Hopefully, the conversation was beneficial to him. Anyways, this week, I stumbled across this topic a couple of weeks ago, and I can't remember if I talked about it. I should have looked it up. But then I came across this question, and some of it's a couple of years old, but this stuff is still swirling, and I thought, well, I will just touch on this quickly. I don't know if you've heard of the 2+2=5 scenario or discussions. In keeping with the critical theories of different types, critical gender theory, you know, or yes, that's called queer theory, critical race theory, all the critical theory approaches that try to reduce everything to just hierarchies of power, and every system is just a reflection of that power, and that there is nothing objective. It just all devolves into whatever societal constructs decide to say. There is an effort on some parts to try to show that mathematics and science is in fact just another outgrowth of, in this case, whiteness. That mathematics is science, and science is just another way that white people use racist power to hold other people, you know, under their thumb, that to demand that people adhere to things like mathematics, or to demand that they acknowledge that mathematics is true, is just another oppression of the masses by the white racist overlords. So there was a couple of weeks back, and
I'm not sure
that I did the podcast on this. I was thinking about it, and then I think I got distracted by other things. But there was a kind of flare-up on Twitter about 2 plus 2 equals 5. Because I think someone said, well, 2 plus 2 doesn't equal 5. And some of the social justice people were saying, you know, well, that's just another construct. And in fact, they had put out the call to mathematicians and said, can you figure out some way that 2 plus 2 equals 5, and that's true, so we can demonstrate, in fact, that this is all just whiteness and a construct, and it's not really true. And so some well-meaning mathematicians started redefining symbols and redefining operands and all that kind of stuff, which doesn't prove anything. It really doesn't prove anything. Because you can change your symbology, but that doesn't mean the underlying effect changes. And the underlying construct is that there is such a thing as numbers. And when you cluster those numbers together, the resulting sum of those clusters is not indeterminate when you're talking about just plain integers. So if you want to say 2 plus 2 equals 5, it means that you foo-fooed up the numbers somehow by changing what the numbers represent, by maybe making them floating point, doing rounding things, or changing how the addition operand works. You're doing something where you're foo-fooing something up. Because if you have two oranges, and you put two more oranges with them, and then you count the oranges, you have four oranges. But, amazingly enough, we do live in a time where some would try to contend that 2 plus 2 equals 4 is a mere social construct, and you shouldn't demand that everybody agree with that. So, that's interesting. So I did come across... I did come across this question that had been asked on a bulletin board, and there were a bunch of flavors to this question. One was, is math real? Another one was, is math 100% accurate? Another one is math true? And I don't know if these questions were written from the perspective of 2 plus 2 equals 5. I don't know that the people who were answering these questions really understood what was being asked, because that's the difficult part of all this. You might ask a question like, is math real? And you get some well-meaning people who are plumbing the depths of their experience and trying their best to say something that's accurate, when in fact they don't know really how that answer is going to be taken. But, you know, I mean, there were some interesting things. One guy said, frankly, we don't know that math is real. And he's not talking about numbers here. He's talking about the higher level stuff where you're running complex mathematical systems. This one person says, in the 1930s, a mathematician called Kurt Gödel came along and proved the incompleteness theorem. He proved that any sufficiently complex mathematical system is going to have statements that cannot be proven true and statements that cannot be proven false. What's more, the consistency of that statement system is going to be one of those statements. And what's more, any system complex enough to contain arithmetic, which isn't particularly a high bar, is complex enough for this theorem to apply. So some things you just have to, you know, take on faith. Another person said, when asked, is math real? They said, yes, it is also discrete, complex, topological, abstract, algebraical, integrated. and he went on to say, or perhaps you mean something different. In this case, I ask you, is the English language real? If you say that it is, then in the same sense, mathematics is real. It's certainly something that people do. In that sense, it is real, as in it exists as a pursuit. If you say no, then I don't know how to help you. Another person said, well, let's define what is real. It seems to me that there can be two ways of existing, one for material objects in the physical world and another for so-called abstract objects in the mind or consciousness, however firmly rooted in the mental realm. And why stop there? Why shouldn't there be as many ways of existing as there are things that exist? So, let's see. One guy said, is math real? No. Numbers are an arithmetical esteem communicated by word, sign, or figure, symbolizing to a specific value and utilized as part of a tallying and making computations and for demonstrating requests in an arrangement. They are not real. They are unmaterialistic conceptual elements theoretically existent in our metaphysical creative ability. Math is an array of algorithmic equations used to harness the fictional idea that is numbers. Arithmetic is natural because it is experimentally unavoidable practice, however, isn't real in the light of the fact that it is built upon an ontological premise. Real, colon, this is his definition, quote, actually existing as a thing or incurring in a fact, not imagined or supposed. Reality as a concept is dependent and requires the presence of an alternative term so as to establish its own meaning, validity, and purpose. You can't have words like real and not have words like unreal. The pair depend on one another to make sense and exist. If abstract entities aren't unreal, then what is it? Wouldn't the contrariety between imagination and reality be conflated? So there's plenty of discussions on this. This, that, and the other. Bertrand Russell, had his own comments about this, or a whole bunch of people that talked about it. One of the ones that I always find interesting when we're talking about mathematics is that physics laureate Eugene Wigner, I don't know, coined the phrase the unreasonable effectiveness of mathematics, which is really fun. He pushed strongly for the idea that mathematics is real and discovered by people as opposed to being invented. Wigner pointed out that many purely mathematical theories developed in a vacuum, often with no view towards describing any physical phenomenon, have later proven decades or even centuries later to be the framework necessary to explain how the universe has been working all along, which is a really interesting thing. So someone makes up some mathematics just because it seems like a great thought, and then all of a sudden it has an application later. He said, for instance, the number theory, a British mathematician Gottfried Hardy, who had boasted that none of his work would ever be found useful in describing any phenomenon in the real world, helped establish cryptography. Another piece of his purely theoretical work became known as the Hardy-Weinberg Law in Genetics and won a Nobel Prize. And Fibonacci stumbled on his famous sequence while looking at the growth of an idealized rabbit population. Mankind later found the sequence everywhere in nature, from sunflower seeds and flower petal arrangements to the structures of the pineapple and even the branching bronchi in the lungs. Or there's the non-Euclidean work of Bernard Riemann in the 1850s, which Einstein used in the model for general relativity a century later. Here's an even bigger jump. Mathematical knot theory, first discovered around 1771 to describe the geometry of position, was used in the late 20th century to explain how DNA unravels itself during the replication process. It may even provide key explanations for string theory. Some of the most influential mathematicians and scientists of all of human history have chimed in on the issue as well, often in surprising ways. So, is mathematics an invention or a discovery, artificial construct or universal truth, human product or natural, possibly divine creation? These questions are so deep, the debate often becomes spiritual in nature. The answer might depend on the specific contents being looked at it, but it can all feel like some sort of distorted Zen koan. If there's a number of trees in the forest, but no one is there to count them, does that number exist? I mean, there's a lot of interesting stuff in there. But for me, you know, when people are trying to take something like 2 + 2 = 5 and trying to campaign for figuring out how that could possibly be true so that we can upend all of mathematics, including simple arithmetic. My response is, yeah, well, if you want to throw all that out, and you want to say, well, I can interpret it any way I want to, and I can say that 2 + 2 = 5, that's fine, but it basically means that all of your science goes out the window too, which is apparently part of this whole thing, because there have been calls to defund STEM. And if all your science goes out the window, all your technology goes out the window as well. So who knows whether math and science are actually real, but they're certainly useful. And there's an inherent contradiction in trying to prove that math and science aren't real, that they're just an interpretation of the white hierarchy, white racist hierarchy, and trying to do that at the same time on cell phones and computers on an internet, none of which would exist without that science and mathematics. And trying to prove that seems to me to be inherently conflicted and inconsistent and, frankly, incoherent. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.